Okay, thanks, Steve. We are just about finished today. We have a brief update on the frequency hopping spread spectrum radio project. Then we'll have the Tapper membership meeting, which will begin with a very brief presentation of what Tapper is for those of you who aren't familiar with the group. And then we will adjourn. But before we do that, we have to get back to knobs for a minute. And I would just like to state for the record that without a knob, you cannot truly be one with the electrons. So, and I mean a physical knob, not one of these damn phosphor things. So, well, anyway, let me get this hooked up here.
Build a box with a USB port with a knob on it.
Well, that's what, on the Kachina, which has an optional knob for people like me, it actually connects to the serial port, and it's functionally identical to a mouse. It's just as a different way of twisting it. Ah, good.
But we connect it to the radio where it belongs.
Yeah, the computer that has my Kachina connected with it has 6 serial ports, and they're all used by the time you get finished with all of the I.O. that it uses for that. Well, anyway, a lot of you may be aware that Tapper has been working for several years now on a project for frequency-hopping spread-spectrum radio, and it's been a long, slow, painful process, and it's been referred to as our phase 3D because it's been about as long in germination. And frankly, we think it's as important. Project is teaching us a lot. Because this is talking now more or less to the members, it hasn't put us in any kind of financial jeopardy to pursue it, and yet we've had very, 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 very smart people putting a lot of their volunteer energy into trying to design and build this thing. And we're hopeful that it's going to see the light of day, but no matter what happens, I think it's been a very worthwhile thing for us to do. I do have an update. Tom McDermott, who is one of the two or three lead people on the project and is the one who's been most active working on it recently, did provide us an update. He's not able to be here today. He went to work for a startup in the optical networking business about 18 months ago, and he's found that keeps him busy, so he was traveling on business this weekend. There's been a lot of process, actually, in just the last about 6 to 8 weeks. The radio has two boards, a digital board and an RF board. The digital board has been the one we've been spending most of our time on. It's the most complex, and it's also given us a real problem because we started the design process with a bunch of these really big, complicated chips. And about a year ago, is that right, John? 18 months ago, Motorola, who manufactures most of them, obsoleted about 8 out of 11 of the main chips on the board, something ridiculous like that. And we had to go back and basically redesign the whole board. We ended up replacing one or two of the discrete chips with an FPGA, a field programmable grid array, which Tom has been programming with hundreds of thousands of gates. And basically a whole lot of work, but where we are right now is that as a practical matter, the digital board is working. We have to do another turn of the hardware. There still is tweaking to do, but it is now decoding data, which is a great step forward. You know, this digital board is running Xinu, which is a very primitive, simple version of Unix with a complete TCP/IP stack on it. It uses a Motorola 360 processor, which is one of the Motorola 68000 series processors. About 8 or 9 years ago, that would have been enough to run a multi-user Unix computer, plus communications capabilities on a single chip. So this is a very powerful radio. You actually will program it via its little web page. You talk to it on port 80 and send it HTTP, and it gives you a form to do all the parameter setting. So all of that stuff is working. These are big words. Many of them I don't understand, but I am told that's all good stuff. The analog to digital converters are working. The demodulator is functioning. We have done a loopback of the data path through the whole system. So that's all playing at the baseband level. The RF level isn't functioning yet. And just to prove that it works, Tom sent this out. This is the constellation of the data. And again, for people who know what they're talking about, you know, this is pretty good. It means that it's doing something. One of the concerns is you'll see these two sets of lines should cross at the zero point in the center. They don't quite do that. There's a little bit of an offset that they're working on trying to understand. But basically, the news is very, very good that the digital board, which has been the one that's given us the most trouble, is now functioning. Still, again, the final work to do on it, and then attention being turned to the RF board, and then we just pray that there will be no more major components obsoleted on us in the short term, because that's really what cost us, you know, I don't know if it's a year or 18 months or of time in getting this thing out, was having to go back and do that redesign. So that is pretty much the presentation on the radio. I'm just really not in a position to answer much in the way of detailed questions because I'm not directly involved in it, and I sure can't pretend to be Tom. But we did want to show that there's been activity, and probably we've made a stair step movement up in the progress on the radio with this last set of activities that's happened that gets this thing working. And now we are finished with the DCC program today. And what
Can I ask a business question on this?
You sure can.
I had the recent fortune or unfortunate case to move to a rural area, so I'm wondering what it's like to have phone lines. Are you still planning, and I realize first things first, but are you still planning on doing a Part 15 with partnership with somebody, with like Bandon or whoever?
Yeah, and just for background to Jeff's question, we knew when we started this radio project that we could not manufacture it ourselves at a cost point that hams would buy, because we just aren't able to drive the volume. So we entered into an OEM agreement with a company called Bandon, and basically received some funding to help us with the development as well as the support from Bandon to do that, with the idea that Tapper would sell the radios into the ham market and Bandon would sell them into the commercial market when the radio came out. Since that time, we've had the minor problems in the stock market, and Bandon is still in existence. I really have no idea what their business condition is, but they're not at this point being particularly active, but they're still around. And our goal is still, no matter what happens, how things play out, that for this to be successful, it's going to have a commercial manufacturing partner, and we're still looking at that dual
strategy.
Yeah, yeah. And for those of you who aren't familiar, you know, with why do we need another 900 megahertz radio, and I don't want to take a lot of time, but this is a different radio because this was designed by RF people instead of computer people. This is not your standard Part 15, go 100 yards in a building type of device. It's designed to be able to operate over a 30-mile path. It does about 128 kilobit per second, roughly, although there's a lot of variability in that number depending on how much forward error correction it's doing. It's a very robust RF system, so it's much more practical for that linking and wide area coverage than taking a wavelength card or something that was really designed to use in a LAN and trying to put it out in the real world. So that's the big difference. That's why we're doing this rather than just taking some piece of commercial Part 15 hardware. So, and I need to go.